This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from Catatalk Software. A podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At Catatalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software.
Welcome back to the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Brickler. As usual today, I'm accompanied by my brother, founder and CEO of Catatalk Software, Scott. Great for a conversation today.
Good to be here.
So Scott, today, I'm really excited about today because we don't have a guest today, but this really educational episode coming from a background in education. I really love the opportunity to share what we do, what we know with others. And so today's episode, we're really going the deep dive, maybe even out of my depth, on manufacturing strategies, right? And how manufacturing companies work in terms of different approaches to different types of manufacturers, right? Now, I think before I came to Catatalk and before I knew about manufacturing, I assumed that all manufacturers were the same. You manufacture stuff, right? Like, what's the difference? And the reality is that not all manufacturers are, in fact, the same. They're quite diverse, lots of different types of manufacturing. And I don't mean like different products, but different methods, I guess, for manufacturing. And really, there are four main methods of these manufacturing that we're going to talk about today. We're going to just talk about the foundations of those, how they work, and then what we have seen in relation to our customers, and maybe even the evolution of Catatalk from one type of manufacturing to others, right? Because I know since I've been here, we've seen different types of customers with different manufacturing, a lot of times mixed types of manufacturing. So Scott, you're going to be really the subject matter expert here. All of I've learned from manufacturing doesn't come from schooling or working in manufacturing like yourself. It comes from talking to customers and people like yourselves to learn about manufacturing. So Scott, today we're going to talk about different types of mode, they call manufacturing mode. Before we jump into the different types of modes, if you're going to give someone a layperson or someone new, what are manufacturing modes?
Essentially, it's like kind of, I guess you can think about it as like a strategy or how you go about, you know, and a lot of times it has to do with the kind of products that you're making, right? So like, you know, I think if you think about it existing on a spectrum, it's just, you have products that are kind of on mass production on one side, and then you have others that are just like one-off, very customized products on the other. And these modes or these modes kind of exist somewhere on that spectrum. It would be a way of looking at it. And then you can say that like, and then there's obviously no one company probably is just one mode or the other, or very rarely they just one mode. They usually have some kind of mix of things they do. But the way you structure your business would change depending on, you know, what mode you kind of operate in mostly, because then the problems really change, like how you approach things and how you, especially on the ERP side. I mean, like when you think about like the accounting side, things like that, there's different strategies around it, probably beyond the scope of this, but different strategies around how you do cost accounting and how you measure things and how do you estimate things. Because like, and typically that a lot of that, if I had to really boil it down, it has to do to how much predictability is there in your process and like, and how much variability is in there based on like, you know, the products that you make drives that.
So the mode, I would think that the ERP, clicking on that ERP a little bit, talking about that, is the ERPs would have all these different types or modes of manufacturing, right? Otherwise they couldn't, they would only be able to be used by one type of manufacturer. If you didn't use that mode, you couldn't use that ERP.
Yeah, most ERPs, I mean, are kind of based on, I believe, APIC standards, which is, I'm blanking what the APIC acronym is, but it's an organization that kind of developed the standards around how to do the accounting around ERP and MRP and things like that. So most ERP systems will be compliant with that kind of APIC standard. So you can usually handle most types of manufacturing. Now, that being said, some ERPs have been geared around certain problems and certain modes better than others. A lot of times if you have an ERP very much structured around a make to order or make to stock type of mode, then it tends to be a little bit less friendly to engineer to order. Thinking of those being on different sides of the spectrum, right? So there's different, and there's even philosophies within those. I mean, you can, I mean, so we can get into more of that about that and how you approach it. So, yeah.
So I think you touched upon a little bit about what modes are. I think you mentioned a couple of modes there. I remember when I first came to CAD Talk, I didn't even know what those things were. And so I think it'd be good to define each of those modes. And so on my list here, on this first mode is what they call make to stock. So if I were not working in manufacturing, I would just assume that it means what it looks like it means. It means like you make something and you put it on a shelf. Is that accurate, or did I just make that up?
Yeah, I think about it being, yeah, it's like you have a standard product, you make it maybe in a couple different options, and then you just like, you know, then you just make them, and you know that there's a certain amount of demand in the market to make it. So you're just kind of doing mass production, right? And you're just making the thing to stock, and then the stock will be depleted through the supply chain and being purchased and things like that. So it just means that you're made to, between the different, like, and we'll get into make to order next, but make to stock is, I would say, is a little bit, it's just a little bit different because you're making it for the intention to put it on a shelf for maybe retail purchase or something like that. So some of the examples are like, you know, clothing lines or office supplies, because you know that they're going to, a certain amount of, we're going to make so many pencils are going to get consumed a month. I'm going to make, you know, this many pencils for stock. And then we're going to replenish the stock in the Staples store based on my stock or whatever. So that's kind of like you're just making to a kind of a production plan of what normal demand is in the market.
So I would assume that, like, for example, like, you know, I have my Diet Sunkist here, right? Because everybody knows I love to drink my Diet Sunkist. So I assume Diet Sunkist is a make to stock. They're not making this just for me, right? They're making it for a whole bunch of people. So now I may be their biggest consumer, but
maybe, yeah.
But that's a different problem, right? So it sounds like some food stuffs would be like, we go to the grocery store and like Kroger or whoever your grocer is, they buy from a manufacturer who manufactures the stock, right? They make a bunch of Diet Sunkist cans, right? And they put them in a package and they put them on a shelf or in a warehouse somewhere. And then I guess distributors like Kroger or Albertsons or Publix or any of those buy them and then distribute them to us. So those were, and then I guess other ones would be like anything you would put on a shelf, right? So I go to the store, Best Buy for electronics, or I buy speakers or any of those sorts of things. Like you said, clothing, that's all stuff that would be kind of made to stock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I think one of the things that's interesting about make to stock is that, at least in my opinion, it's one of those things where you see less and less of it because the computer systems have gotten so much more sophisticated. So one of the things that Walmart did was tracking systems is what was actually turning a lot of make to stock into make to order, because they were able to track down to the level of those transactions at the checkout to then trigger out certain ordering, you know, at that level. Whereas before, they would just kind of, it was more like we're guessing at a certain stocking level and things like that. And then that would trickle down, that trickles down the supply chain to the manufacturers who just make in certain bulk things like that. So based on what my understanding is, you know, like I said, I'm not an absolute expert in this, but because I'm not a supply chain, you know, expert, but the idea is you're seeing, my experience has been, there's been a lot more, or you're seeing a lot more make the stock kind of being converted into make to order, but more kind of on a mass scale, right? Where like make to order typically is like, I'm going to buy this thing, I'm going to make the thing for the person. But like, you could also say that those large suppliers are ordering different batch sizes based on dynamic demand, which is a little bit more like an order, make to order type of scenario as opposed to make the stock. But people would argue different opinions on that. So
sure. But you said it was a spectrum, right? Like that companies are on a spectrum. So it's that point, make to stock as the technology gets the better can start to, on the spectrum, move a bit more towards make to order, maybe not fully, but can start to tend that way. Because my assumption is before technology got there, like you said, manufacturers would just make a bunch of stuff, right? Put it on the shelf and then would essentially wait for someone else to buy it, whether that's a distributor or sell it themselves, right? So I would assume that as the data gets better and that, as you said, that customer data, that like how much they'll purchase, how much customers are purchasing directly, before that happened, it was just put on the shelf and then try to figure out, right? Like if you got too much or too little, right? So should I continue to make this amount or should I like throttle it back or should I make some more? And I would imagine in a make to stock without that data, you'd either make too much or too little. And you were always trying to figure out like what that balance was before you had the data because, like, I don't know, right? And then the lead time for spinning it up would be good, would be, you might have too much or too little, right? It's like why, like, you have too much stock. You used to have, like, they have, like, overstock sales. Like, oh, we got too much of the stock. We got to get rid of it, right? Where, or they have shortages where, like, we can't make it fast enough because we had a big rush. I'm sure that happens today still, but I would imagine less so. Like, just a more...
Yeah. I mean, it's still like make the stock. I mean, you think about like consumer, I always think about like, go back to the Christmas analogy where they have the hot toy, right? And there's no way to predict what the hot toy is going to be, right? So I think when we were kids, we'll show our age here, the hot toy in the 80s was the Atari, right? And they couldn't make enough Ataris, or they couldn't make enough Nintendos at the time. And then if they guess wrong the production, then they don't have enough to sell, right? And then people are
worse. You don't have, you have too many to sell. Which is even worse.
Yeah. Well, it could be worse. I mean, depends on your perspective, but in your cost ratios, right? So like you can make a lot more, but if your cost is really low, then okay, you made extra, but your margins, depends on how much your gross margins are on the materials and stuff that kind of drives that. But yeah, I mean, so the idea would be like, well, I'm going to guess, you know, so even if there's no, people they're not getting pre-orders necessarily for the Ataris, at least they weren't back then. They're just having to guess at what that's going to be. So they're making the stop, right? Now, as the data gets better, we call the feedback loop gets more, they can measure that even like consumer demand. They can measure things like, man, we're seeing a lot of buzz around this on the social media. And we can measure that and we can correlate that social media buzz with a certain amount of sales. So it's like they're getting better at like predicting those things, still technically make the stock, but the estimates on the stock are so much more accurate because the feedback loops are and the technology is better. Yeah.
So you teased a little bit the next one, the make to order. So tell me a little bit about make to order. I assume, right? Like it means that you make someone or a customer orders a product that calls you up and says, hey, I want to buy whatever it is. And then the manufacturer just makes it.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically you'd have like kind of an example of that would be you're making, furniture or some machinery, kind of like, they can make the thing. It's more of a standard product that they make. It's just that they are making it not ahead of time. They're not predicting demand. They're waiting for the actual demand to show up. And then the order gets kicked out and then they make it for that order. So it's like very rarely would they make it just to put it on the shelf to try to sell it. They would make it because somebody bought it. So you pre-buy it and then they're just kind of servicing the order. And it tends to be like make to order tends to be around like, they're making all the components and doing all of that, and not just assembling it and stuff like that. But that is generally, it's everything's being driven by an order of some sort, you know, from the end customer or up the supply chain, you know, in aggregate. Because as I was alluding to earlier, with make the stock, you're making it for stock, but like depends on where you might be making it from an order from the supplier, from a grocery store who puts it in stock, right? So it's just like you get it. So it's just kind of where you are in the supply chain that makes that. But generally it's a more standard product or configurable product, a product that has a couple of different features and options that you can choose from, but still standard, you know, product and that you're putting together or you're building for that customer.
Okay. So I wanted to touch on you said configuring. So what I typically think about configuring, I think a configurator, right? Like, so for example, we talked about, I think a couple of weeks ago with one of our customers and they have a configurator, right? We talked about, and their goal was to be able to allow their customers to configure anything around the website and be able to, like, you could get it, right? They can make it to order. You'd order it and then in a few minutes it'd be on the shop floor and they're making it. So it sounds like a configurator, which is a software tool, it would be applicable to a make-to-order company.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great example. A configurator would typically be around either a make to order or an assembled order, which we'll get to later, kind of company, you know. So, and like, so that's because there's features and options. They don't want to make it to stock because the number of variations would be prohibitive to do that. Can't guess the variations, right? So, like in the case of the PVC linear from last time, there's like, you know, hundreds of thousands of combinations and things that they put together. And so those things would be prohibitive to like try to make stock for because they can't guess the production. So they just wait for the orders to come in.
Right. Right. Okay. So that was make to order, right? Someone might use a configurator and that could be like, you know, so for example, they make a if I order a specialty color car, right, then that could be like a make-to-order situation where it's the same type of car, but it's specialized in the color, right? Some one-off color that they don't typically do, or they only do for specialized reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so a lot of times, like in Toyota, like in the Toyota production, people think a lot of like cars used to be made to stock more than they are today. And there's probably, it's probably, once again, exists on a spectrum, right? So if you have, you know, the cars, you know, some cars are made because they know they're going to be purchased because there's just a certain amount of demand for certain types of cars. But a lot of times especially for Toyota, they're made actually by to the order because they know that somebody ordered it from the dealership, a specific way, then they would make that on the line for their particular order. Or like a lot of times a Ferrari, would be made to order, not necessarily just for off the, just put it on the shelf and say, I have somebody buy it or put it on the showroom floor thing. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. And so I think you were just mentioning, assemble to order, and you also mentioned engineering to order. Which are those you want to take next?
We can go to assemble to order because it's somewhat similar to make to order. The difference is really with how far the parts are being made. So like examples of that would be like, it's used like Dell, right? Dell is a configured, so I like the term configure to order because it kind of encompasses both make to order and assemble to order, because really what you're talking about with, it's just how far along is the raw materials in this situation, right? So if I were make to order, then I might pull the raw material like bar stock and make the part and then put it together and sell it to you. Like in the case of PVC linear, they have to make the shaft a certain length, right? Because, right, they're not going to pre-make the shafts because that would be, once again, you'd be tying up inventory at a length of shaft that doesn't make any sense to say, you don't know for sure you're going to sell it. But in the case of like a computer manufacturer like Dell, they know they're going to sell, 2 gig RAM chips pretty much all the time. So they're buying all these components like RAM and hard drives and things like that. And they're just assembling them for the configured order. And they know what combinations of these kind of pre-built parts can be assembled in a way that for the orders they get. So that's more of an assembled order would be like a Dell, where a make to order would be more like our customer PVC linear, where they're actually making some of the parts. So it's just where the parts are and kind of in their supply chain, right? And their small state. So, and the reason why you want to do that is because you can move faster, assemble to order, right? If you've done the manufacturing and you know you can make a lot of different products with these kind of pre-built components, you can still deliver a pretty customizable, like a configured product, but in a lot less time because you're not spending metal and trying to make it. You can just take these pre-built components that are manufactured ahead that you pull off of stock, and then you assemble them in a different way to get the end product.
Right. So it sounds like manufacturers are assembled to order, focus really just on the name is assembled to order, that they just assemble. They order a bunch of components that are manufactured by someone else. They have them in stock and then they put them together based upon the order, right? So like you said, Dell, I call up Dell or back in the day, or I could say I want this type of hard drive and this type of screen and all of this, and then they have the components there, you put them all together, put it in a box and ship it to you, and then you're done.
Yeah, exactly. And they may manufacture some of the components. They may like fabricate the case or things like that. I don't know if they do. I think they outsource that. But like, once again, you exist on a spectrum, but the things they're pre-made. They're not starting with like raw stock and making a shaft or something like that for the order. So it's the lead times tend to be smaller or shorter. You know, it's like when you order a Dell computer, if you had to wait 6 months, you wouldn't buy the thing. You have to get the thing in like 2-3 weeks. So they have to have these things like, kind of off the shelf. They can assemble quickly and ship it.
Yeah. So I would think the flexibility, what they can offer is lower too, right? Not that it's low, but lower, meaning that like, it's not wide open. You can just do anything, but it's also not, there's lots of options you can choose from, but they are limited. Now the limit might be like 100, right? Or like PVC linears could be nearly unlimited, but to your point, they have a limit to what they could do because it's not wide open.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the trade-off between flexibility and speed.
Right. Cause if you had to make all that stuff, right, it's unlimited, then you can't deliver as fast.
Yeah. And you're always kind of balancing kind of like, you're like anything is an optimization problem. I mean, manufacturing, coding, all this stuff's optimization. So in this case, you're trying to say, well, if I make the components ahead of time, I'm adding cost to something that I hope I can sell. So you're taking on cost risk. If I keep it in this raw material format, that's the least That's the least cost format that it can be in, which lowers risk, but it increases time. So you're always trying to balance these kind of different components like cost, risk, time, and get the right mix of that to figure out like how to get yourself a competitive advantage in the market.
And the last time in manufacturing, which is one I think that you're most familiar with, but one that you have direct experience working in a manufacturing company with, is this engineering to order. So I think this is where the idea of Cash Talk originally came out, although we've seen that idea even reach other areas. We'll talk about that in a bit, but like I really want to focus on like what is this engineering to order, and you know, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, engineering to order, it's like it's typically like you're getting a lot more customized equipment, like your customized product, not equipment necessarily, but a more custom, like a product that does exactly what you want it to do, so that it's been engineered for your use case. So I came from the packaging industry. So the reason why packaging machines were considered engineer order is because every product that you're packaging is a little bit different, right? Like we used to make like the machines that put the bags of cereal into cartons. And you're like, well, aren't cereal boxes about the same? And they all, you know, they're bags and boxes, but like the boxes aren't the same. Like they're, you know, like different, like they're actually shaped in different ways and they have different flaps and they're different sizes and they have different, like even the colors, like, cause there's like the colors are certain places. So they have to do barcode. It's like all these things are in kind of slightly different than they were. So a lot of times in engineer order, you're not just starting from scratch, like just start from scratch with a clean plate and build something new. You're typically starting with kind of a more standard design. Just like when you buy a custom home, you don't usually, you typically start with like, you know, a template of some sort that kind of they know works. So you're not reinventing the wheel and everything, but you can change it whatever you'd like to what you want. So like in the case of the packaging machines, they let you pick what motors you wanted and they let you pick what controls you wanted, like in that ran the machines, because maybe you had like, you know, some customers had deals with like Allen Bradley where they got discounts. If they bought machines that had those controls in their machine, in the machines they bought, they would essentially get discounts from Allen Bradley, the manufacturer, for those controls. You know, so like, even though we standardized on Siemens controls, we'd have to change it out, make it Allen Bradley, because that's what engineer order means. So that's kind of stuff you could do. But generally there's a certain level of part that you have to engineer for that customer order that changes it up. That's what causes that. And that engineer order is like, I mean, that's where I came from. So like, and there's problems that exist with engineer order, and why CAD Talk fit there the most is because you have a lot of engineering change. You have a lot of engineering happening. So I think when I worked at the packaging company, it was like at the time, you know, it was like 500 people in the company and like 200 and something of them were engineers. So we're like, you know, like over a third of the company is just engineers. So if you have that many engineers, a lot of engineering is happening, right? You know, you have a lot of, like, it was like 3,000 new part numbers every month, 3,000 engineering changes a month. I mean, you're just cranking out designs because you're making them for the orders. And even though you had some kind of baseline products, you were generating variations of those for the customer specifications.
I heard one story. They said that, well, a couple of things. First is engineering to order. I would speak to customers. They would tell me that, you know, we do the same thing, but different. And I said, yeah. And then the other thing I heard is like some packaging machinery equipment's like the design could change slightly depending upon like what floor the machine was on and like where it was in the country because of the humidity, because of the temperature. Now, maybe that's different because of buildings are temperature controlled now, maybe better so. But that's stories I had heard that like you design it like a customer, let's say it was like your point, Budweiser or PepsiCo or one of these, some other food vendor was to put, like you said, cereal, like General Mills is going to put the cereal bag in the box and say, well, the types of boxes you used, the ink that they used in that box, where it was in the shop, where it was in the country in the shop, all mattered because you might have to change the design slightly because of the effects to make it run better, run smoother, or like just even work. Because sometimes those small factors would make the machine either not work or inefficient.
Oh yeah. There's actually a funny story about that. Like even like the two machines, like I think it was one, I won't name the customer, but it was like two machines on the same floor packaging exactly the same thing. And then the program that ran the machine, it was all CNC, it's all, you know, control, not CNC, but it's all servos and, you know, controls and everything running these things. So you have a PLC or something running the machines. and the program from one machine would not run the other machine. And the reason that is because they're made not necessarily exactly the same time. And then even the guides and everything they were using to kind of do it, they got the same end result, but they didn't quite get there the same way. So it's just all those kinds of small variations that you're dealing with that it made it so you couldn't even run the same program. So they were even customized at the software level because I'm sure they were also customized at the somewhere there was different parts somewhere because there's constant little tweaks down that, and when you're running like, you know, hundreds of boxes a minute or whatever it is that you're doing at that scale, very, very small variations make a big difference.
So you mentioned that, I mean, the Cat Talk came from the idea that you were working at this packaging machinery company that you're doing 3,000 new parts and all lots of engineering changes. So one of the things that comes up on calls with customers that I've had in the past, sales calls or just, you know, people meeting me, trade shows or different things would be like, hey, you know, some customers would tell me, well, we don't make the same thing, so we wouldn't need Cat Talk. And I would always be like, wouldn't you need Cat Talk? If you made the same thing every time? Or, you know, it's like they sometimes would get it backward, right? Like you don't really need Cat Talk if you make the same thing over and over. So maybe that's a good time to think about like which of these, like what's different about these in terms of their CAD requirements, the different types of manufacturing types that make to stock, make to order, engineer to order, and assembly to order. We have customers across that spectrum, right? Like we talked about PBC Linear last week. They're actually a
configure to order, yeah.
Configurator, yeah. What we call configure to order, which I think is a subset make to order, right? Because they wait for the order to come in, then they just have a configurator that does a bunch of work, outputs a design. Cat Talk then works in there, right? So Cat Talk one fit is in a make to order scenario. So in a company that's make to order, Cat Talk would have a fit. Case in point, PBC Linear is a make to order company. They use a configurator to generate the models, but then Cat Talk still works to get it in the ERP. Makes sense. So we're still doing that getting the data in there. So understand that. What about like a make to stock scenario, or which is we talked about like computers or speakers or things like that? Would there be a Cat Talk product that'd be a fit there?
Yeah, I think we identified that over time is that there's the intuitive fit, then there's the less intuitive fit, which has to do with like cost savings, right? So if you think about what an integration would provide, like the most it typically provides kind of several different benefits. One, the most common one, or the easiest one to understand, is like time savings, right? It's like, how much am I saving time bringing this data over, right? Maybe that's my hammer house. So that time savings is like the most common, you know, the most common one. And that's the one everybody kind of picks up on right off the bat and they're able to like identify. So when you think about an engineer to order scenario, it's like, well, I got a lot of engineering happening. So that transferring of data becomes, you know, very, very time consuming, and it has a lot of cost to it. Now, over time, we started seeing like, even with customers who are doing make to order or even configure to order. Configure order looks like engineer to order. It's just that the software is kind of generating the configurations as opposed to an engineer. So it's like, it has some of the same problems. They still have a lot of variations. So that speed is also helpful. But when you have make to stock or make to order type of situations, you know, what's driving that? Well, typically you see more PLM in those customers where they're driving towards more of a, like a model year, or they're creating a long engineering cycle to create a variation of the product, usually on a longer time frame. And that's where the benefit of consistency really shines with a product, with an integration. Okay. Because the software is more consistent than people doing it. And therefore it's faster to make, you know, as they're kind of iterating on that during that stage and figuring out what that is, it's also the time and it's more consistent about how the output of that. So people like the fact that the software consistently does that and it's accurate and consistent. Therefore, that's why people tend to like using Cat Talk for those, or using an integration for those types of situations. So it just depends on what benefit you're trying to get. It has multiple benefits, but you value one benefit over the other depending on what kind of business you are.
So what I'm hearing is that, you know, like we see customers, as you said, make to order, make to stock, engineering to order, and sometimes even assembly to order. I can cross all of them, But the use cases can be slightly different, right? Well, I think about the initial use case, engineering order makes a lot of sense. I'm generating lots of new parts all the time. I got to get new SKUs. I got to get them into my ERP as quickly as possible in order to get on the shop floor to get them delivered. And then you think like make to stock is a situation where the customer says, oh, well, I have a PLM, right? Like, but you still got to design. You got to design every model year, right? You got to design. That takes it's a long development cycle, but you want to put that into the PLM that then gets approved and then manufactured, either outsource manufacturing or in-house, either way. But quality of that data into the PLM system is critical. So getting it out of the CAD into that PLM, it's not so much a time issue as much as it is a data quality issue, right? And so like engineered order is really about the driver there is really more about speed, right? I need to get it out of the engineer onto the shop floor because it's long lead time and all these other challenges that I need to overcome. Whereas a make to stock, well, I'm putting into a PLM and we're going to develop the new product over time, like the new, I think about like a, you said, new Nintendo system, new iPhone or something. Well, the quality is there. And then in a make to order, like our customer talked about, was a situation where they wait for an order to come in. They do have software generating it, like engineering it, if you will, but then they still got to get into the ERP. And so speed is still, for PPC Linear, speed would matter. They wanted it to go from customer order all the way to the ERP in minutes, right? So they can get working on it. And so that speed was important. But of course, speed and quality were both important on the configure to order, or that what we call that make to order. And then of course, assemble to order, we don't see as often, but because I would think assemble to order would still use a PLM. So I don't know what you would think in there, but like I think of like iPhones or those types of systems, maybe I still have a PLM where they're managing like at least the components, right, of a particular product.
Yeah, they could. I mean, it just depends on what their PLM you could see, yes, with a kind of assemble to order product and things like that. And you typically also see configurators, right? So in assemble to order or in a make to order, you'd have configurators. You don't always have them, but you can. And then with the configurator, you generally have a bill of material being generated on the fly. So anytime you have a configurator, there's an opportunity for a completely unique bill of material to be generated. So that completely unique bill of material needs to be transferred into an ERP somewhere along the line. That's where those, you know, that's typically where the integration point happens for us. So even if the parts are being done, we're not getting the advantage of figuring out manufacturing steps and things like that because those things are already done. There's a lot of customers we have that don't necessarily make any parts. They buy everything and assemble it. So they still have bill of material variations though they're dealing with.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so I remember when I first started at CAD Talk, I remember thinking like, you know, I remember you telling me when I was learning about manufacturing about what engineering order was. And I learned about these other ones just over time, right? Because I'm not an engineer. I didn't go to school for manufacturing, but I learned about these other ones over time with the different types. And then I remember thinking 10 years ago, like you were saying, in your mind, it was engineering order was like our main customer. And then over the last 10 years that I've been here, I've seen all these other types of manufacturers, right? With all the similar needs, right? Same desires to, you know, improve the data quality, improve the speed to getting into the system, you know, streamlining the processes, all of those sorts of things. So, and then I also see that no one manufacturer necessarily does all of one thing or the other. So to your point, you talked about earlier, like it's a spectrum. So the company that you worked for, that manufacturing company, was it purely engineering to order or was it on that spectrum as well?
We were always trying to get to more of a configure to order product. That was one of the things, the jobs I had actually right out of college. I was actually like one of the initiatives I was on was to try to get to a configure to order version of the machines. Cause like the problem with engineer to order is it tends to be expensive because you have engineering, right? So you're like, how do I get to a more configurable machine? So you're doing less, you may not be able to eliminate all engineering, but can you reduce it? And then you can compete with, you know, you can compete on price, which is always, you know, it's always a factor. It doesn't, you know, we hate it, but everybody has to compete on price somewhere. Right. So the idea was like, so still on a spectrum, but like how configurable was it versus how engineered was it? And so the projects that I worked on were like, how could I drive more of the engineering, less engineering and more configurability. And which I thought was an interesting constraint, because like, this is a whole kind of side story, but it was like the company I came from, we used to make these, they'd have new equipment, and then they say start with a basic design, and then they would change the design for the customer order. Okay. And then they also did something called conversions, where they take like an old machine that was out at a customer site, and they would have it retrofitted for a new product. Okay. And it was interesting that I believe the profitability on the conversions were really good. And then my understanding was that the best engineers were actually on conversions, which is an interesting statement, because you're like, well, why is that? Because they have more constraints. So the idea of, because the machine's built already, the more things you take off of it and re-engineer, the more expensive it is. But when it's just in a virtual space and you just had this design and there's no parts made, then it's like there isn't any cost to making the part different. But when you actually have a physical thing there, you get more creative of like, well, how could I reuse this thing that's already here and still make it work and things like that. So one of the discussions we had, it was an idea that I remember having back then, was like, could you treat that original design as if it was a conversion and force the engineering to think more like the conversion engineers did, to try to make the existing machine work, which required less engineering and, those types of things. And that was kind of like some of the ideas that we had around that, which I thought was a pretty cool kind of concept, because it just shows that constraints bring out the genius in people, right? And it just really showed with those types of products. So that was kind of the premise of that, was how do you drive more engineering out of the problem and more configurability into it. And one theory on how to do that was to increase the constraints, saying you can only change these parts, or you can only change this section of the machine and things like that, which drive more ingenuity in the engineering. And the reason why they didn't is because those problems were really hard to solve. And if you were under tight constraints to deliver the design, so you start making them and things like that. So it was always kind of an issue with that, because your engineers were under pressure to deliver the designs, and then so they would just, it's easier to change the designs than it is to try to figure out a really creative one that will fit in that situation. So that was the kind of the push and pull that we had to deal with. But that's typically what you see, is like you're trying to, in an engineer to order environment, you'll see more driving towards configurability. Okay. But generally it's always some small, so sometimes I'll say, well, 50% of the machine is re-engineered, or 60% of the machine, or 70% or 80%, there's always some custom part of it, engineered part of it, but like you drive that number, that percentage higher and higher, or lower and lower for the engineered part. So
this was another good episode. I learned a lot, and I never really thought about all the different modes. I mean, I intuitively knew just because I talked to so many customers, and I never really sat down and thought about the different types. I mean, of course, I know engineering to order because I know that you had worked at that company. And of course, I've been working here I've been working here 10 years. So, but it was really insightful for me to think about like all the different types of manufacturers you need. So Scott, anything else you'd like to add before we let the audience go?
No. I think it's one thing I just kind of a side story of that is like coming out of engineer to order company and then going into consulting and working in software and you get into a consultative or kind of a state where you're talking about, and you tend to think that the rest of the world works like where you were used to work, right? So there's nuance to how you apply solutions to these different types of modes, right? So if you're coming in you come from an engineer to order environment and you're like, oh, we need to do this because it cuts down lead time, all these types of things. It's like those constraints or those problems aren't the same in a company that's assembled to order or a company that's make to order or things like that. They're different. So like they are doing essentially the same kind of manufacturing operations at the core level, but their constraints are different. And you have to understand based on these modes that like what they're trying to optimize for. And if you know those nuances, then you know how to apply the right solutions at the right time. So that was I would think it was a really good lesson when I went from working at a company to consulting and then ultimately to software. It really kind of fueled my like, oh, what is that customer is really optimizing for? What are they really trying? What's the constraints they're dealing with? EBS is manufacturing. They may even be engineer to order, but the problem they have is that they had to be competitive in this market, or they got to deal with lead time. You have to really understand that. And this gives you a framework to which to think about it.
That's a really good point. That's a good point for anyone talking to customers in a consultative, either an implementation or even during the sales process, to talk about what matters to them, right? Because it just changed based upon what type of manufacturing they do, what kind of manufacturing they do and what's most valuable to them. Because like you said, one size doesn't fit all. we tend to use our own experiences to drive people to certain things, but sometimes it's not the best solution.
Exactly right.
Well, thanks everybody again for listening. This was a great episode. I continue to learn more and more about manufacturing and manufacturers. So Scott, we'll have another episode next week and look forward to talking to you again. Maybe have a guest or another, educational episode. I encourage everybody to subscribe to the CAD Talk Integrate Intelligently podcast. Leave some comments, your feedback if you're a manufacturer or if you're a consultant and you want to talk about, working with manufacturing companies. Love to hear from you. If you want to be a guest on the podcast, feel free to reach out to us. Got anything else before we let the audience go?
No, that sounds great.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CAD Talk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CAD Talk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CAD Talk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cadtalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.